In other words, you're free. You become free of the concerns of this life. And it's very, very, I find it very useful, very inspiring, very, very helpful. Why? Because, you know, we haven't cut off attachments, the appearance of this life. We are totally caught up with the appearance of this life. We do not see any gap between how things are and how our minds perceive them. We don't even think there's a gap. Now, Buddha's got a lot to say about this, right? He's got a lot to say about reality and different levels of reality, and we'll get into that later on. But at the moment, I'm just talking about the appearance of this life and how caught up we get, just like a fly that goes into flypaper and then it gets, of course they don't use it anymore, but you know how the fly goes into flypaper and then it gets itself all caught up? That's how we are with the appearances of this life. We're just like a moth that goes into the fire and then gets burned. It looks so beautiful and it goes and it gets burned. Just like a fly that goes into the candle wax and then it gets, my teacher gives this example, he said, the fly goes into the, sees the candle attracted towards the light and then it lands in the wax. And once it gets in the wax, all its wings and its little feet are just coated with wax. And the more it walks, the more it gets coated with the wax, and eventually the wax just, freezes on it, kind of solidifies on it, and it dies. That's how we are with the appearance of this life. We just go into them, and then we end up just caught, and then just... So that's how we are. We are not free. We have not broken free from the prison of just our concepts and our grasping at this life, the appearance of this life. So these three wonderful mantras of Sampajaya, they are... What they're explaining is how it is when you're free. How it is. And so by comparing our situations with this, we can see where the hooks are. We can see the work we have to do. Right? You see what I mean? You actually, and this is worth trillions of dollars in gold, you actually see what the problem is. What is it that I need to shift? You know, what is the work I need to do? So what are these three wonderful mantras? Well, the very first one, and I do recommend you write it down, you've got someone to write it down, otherwise we can write it somewhere. And then we just, then you can just set this, just sit with this. The first one goes like this. It says, whatever comes, just let it come. Whatever comes, just let it come. You heard that? Yeah. Whatever comes, just let it come. And what does that mean? That means just what I was saying. Whatever is happening is just what is happening. Just let it be. The suffering comes when we have resistance to things being the way they are. And of course that doesn't necessarily change the way things are, it just means we suffer. Then the second one is whatever goes, just let it go. Too simple, isn't it? Whatever goes, just let it go. And now again, you see, this is very hard for us because we tend to cling and hold on. And we want things to be the way we want them to be and we don't want them to change. We have a lot of resistance to change. Of course, everything is changing all the time. That's the nature of things. And we kind of know that, but then we still want to somehow... You know, we're looking for security. It's a fantasy security. It doesn't exist. It never has existed. I was in America, you know, the Gulf War was going on, or about to go on. And, you know, one reason why they fought that war, I will tell you, is because all the propaganda was instilling in the people in America a sense of fear. They were playing on people's fear. Do you remember they had everyone going out and they were buying up like plastic and cellophane, and they were wrapping their houses in it, and they were, I mean, I was up in rural Vermont. They were warning the kids in the local school, you know. They were scared that the Iraqis were going to come over and bomb the local dam. Excuse me. That's like thinking the Iraqis are going to come and poison the creek here. I mean, how's it going to happen? It's like, don't you think they have better things to do in Iraq than come to, you know, rural Colville and poison the local creek, you know? It was totally absurd, but they fell for it. They were scared. Why? Because 9/11 caught them unexpected. Because why? Because you don't die, do you? Everything is beautiful. You have a beautiful body and a beautiful life and a beautiful car, and suddenly it all got threatened. And so they were scared. And the government just kept on playing on their fear. And it's very interesting, you know, what happens ordinarily when you play on people's fear. They get angry and they want to attack the thing and eliminate the thing that they're scared of, don't they? Ordinarily. So that's how they did it. They made out that there were these nasty people who were going to come and harm them and their kids. And that's how they made them happy to go in and bomb up schools and this and that. And it was interesting because, so I was giving talks against the war, and I was saying to people, look, just because you have fear, I said, from the Buddhist point of view, we know everything is insecure. We know everything is impermanent and changes all the time. But that doesn't lead us. And we know that it's a hopeless case trying to not make it impermanent, because even this body is going to, we know we're going to die. We know that, and that it can happen any moment. All these things that they were telling the people, therefore attack and bomb, we know that. But does that make us hate everything? No. We use that to generate love and kindness and compassion. Which makes sense, doesn't it? Yes, I could die any moment, therefore what I want to do with my life, use it meaningfully. Not go and attack and kill other people. What's the point? Anyway, so whatever goes, just let it go. Just let it go. But we don't do that. We tend to cling to things. We cling. And it's the truth that the more you cling, the more you suffer. You can write that down. If you're suffering, it's because you're clinging to something. I will tell you that, 100%. When I'm suffering, I'm clinging to something. The recognition of what I'm clinging to doesn't necessarily help, because then I have to do the work, right? But it is true, I'm clinging to something. If I'm suffering, I often tell the story about this old, this lady. One of the students told me she was admitted to hospital, to the intensive care ward, and she was they took her to hospital because they thought she was a danger to herself and to others. She was found in the streets, and she was clutching, her fists were clenched, and she was shouting and screaming. And so they brought her into the hospital, and they overpowered her. They sat on her arms and her legs, and they forced her fingers open one by one to find out what she was clinging to. And she was shouting and abusing them as they were doing this. And when they finally got her fingers open, they found that what she was clutching was a few old coins. And even when they took them away, she still kept shouting and screaming at them. And I often say, well, you know, of course, on the one hand, it's a funny story, but the things that we cling to are far more worthless than a few old coins. When you think of all the mental things that we cling to, so worthless. And yet we shout and scream if someone tries to take them away. I mean, I'm talking about myself. I don't know if this resonates with you. Don't think I'm sitting here talking to you. I'm talking about myself. I see it, how I cling to useless things. used as mental things. Why? And we'll talk more about this, because the whole process of healing is about letting go of these things. Letting go is a big thing in healing. So whatever goes, just let it go. So you have whatever comes, just let it come. Don't have resistance. Just let what's happening be what's happening. You know, you don't have to put anything else onto it. Whatever goes, just let it go. Don't try and cling on to things. And then the final line, I like very much, because the final one is like the one that just kind of like puts the stake at the heart. It's like the one that just kind of points. It just points to the, you know, it just kind of like it reveals, there's a word for it. Anyway, it just kind of, it hits the spot that you have to deal with. So if you have a problem or anything like that, you just sit down and you just go over this. Just mentally go over this. So whatever comes, let it come. And you just see how it applies, you see? Whatever goes, let it go. And the third one then, don't have need of anything. Don't have need of anything. You can say don't need anything, but I like saying don't have need of anything. And there you are, you see. Why is it that we don't let things just be? Why is it that we don't let things just go? Because we have the sense of needing something. Why won't I let go of all my, you know, pains and hurts and things? Because I think I need them. You know, that I'm clinging to something that I think that I need. If you examine, if you check, when we have relationship problems, when we have conflicts, when we have, you know, difficulties going on in our lives with other people, we can solve them like that. We can solve everything in our lives. Really, we can. We really, really can. But we don't. Why don't we? Because why should I? Because we have a sense that if we were to let go, you know, if we were to let go, then we would lose something. It would hurt. Why would it hurt? Because we think we need, you know, it's, what would it hurt? It's a very important question to say to yourself, you know. Well, if I were to let go and resolve this whole thing, okay, maybe it wasn't my fault. Maybe it was completely the other person's fault. But if I were to actually let go of this, if I were to actually resolve this, you know, what would it hurt? Like, why am I not doing it? What do I think that I need in this situation that is stopping me from doing the work I have to do? What is it I think that I need? What is it I'm clinging to? What is it that's going to get hurt? Now that is a very, very interesting question. Because if you check, what is it that's going to get hurt? It is the very thing in Buddhism that we want to completely obliterate and destroy. The very thing that is the root of all our problems in life. The ego, me, I, and the center of the universe. You know? And so then what do? Then you actually let go. And it hurts. And then it doesn't hurt so much. And then suddenly there's this feeling of incredible relief and freedom. Because the pain was the holding on. The pain was defending this I, this me that has to have everything it wants. Do you see what I mean? Just let it hurt. We say in Buddhism, just let it hurt. My teacher says, you know, the source of all the problems is the I, it's the ego. It's this huge, overpowering thing that needs everything to be the way it wants, and everyone has to do what it wants, and believes it's the center of the universe. He says, you know, that's far more dangerous than Bin Laden. It's a benignness, like it's like nothing compared to your ego. So you destroy your ego, you can have infinite happiness and bliss. That's how you become Buddha. We can't even hear or receive all the blessings that are to be rested in this, you know, that are to be received, as long as we are cherishing this huge kind of ego. The I, the me, the mine. So you just let it hurt. And what happens after it's hurt, it becomes so, and you actually start to become healed. Why? Because every time you hurt this I, you are actually getting closer to happiness. You're destroying the very root of all suffering. Don't have need of anything. Yeah. She could just, that lady who's got her fist clenched, she could just say, oh, it's just a few old coins. Would you like them? But she doesn't. And even when they're taken away, she's shouting and screaming. Ah, but there's a secret to this, you see. And the secret to it is it's not superficial. And one of the students in California said to me, and she put up her hand, I was giving a talk and I was talking about actually really, you know, giving the victory to others, actually thinking about others and letting them win, and, you know, handing it back, like, just give all the problems to your ego that's creating the problem, just hand it back. Rinpoche, my teacher, he says, all the problems that are created by your ego, just hand them back, just give them back, you know, like an atom bomb, just poof. He says, you've got the weapons, point the weapon in the right direction, the missile goes here, poof. Just give them back, just give them back. And you must try it, because you won't get it just from what I'm saying. You'll only get it experientially. So when the student, she said to me, you know, I've been trying what you said. And he said, you know, okay, so in my relationship, so, you know, he wants this, and da-da-da-da, so I let him have the victory. She said, but I'm not any happier. And I said, yeah, but you see, you haven't actually done the work. You have just said, okay. You haven't actually gone in there and let go. Do you see the difference? I often tell the story. There was when I was in California, there was I was living quite close to my teacher, and there was one person who stayed with my teacher who was always unhappy with me, always giving me a hard time. And it was very uncomfortable because it was my teacher. But it's like, and I kind of thought, why is this person so cruel, like, so, like, oh, it's perfect, actually, it was totally perfect, but I thought, you know, I can't do this, because this is my, you know, I've got to do something about it, and so I decided I was going to apologize, I was going to fix it, you know, so first of all, I went around, I said to people, you know, do you know why this person doesn't like me, and they gave different versions of the story, and then I figured out, okay, it's like this, exactly what I think this person is doing to me, like picking on me and being mean, is what they think I'm doing to them. Exactly the same. It's like a mirror-like image. So I thought, okay, what I have to do then is I have to apologize. So it took me 3 months. And as I tell this story, I said it took me 3 months, and they're like staring at me, Buddhist, and they're, took 3 months? What do you do? I said, no, I'm being honest. It took that long. There's someone that I thought was continually being mean to me to actually go up and really, you know, not just, I'm so sorry, you know, and run out the door again, but she knows I don't mean it, to actually, from my heart, you know, go and say, I'm really sorry if I've hurt you. You know I must appear mean and cruel sometimes. I'm really sorry. You know, please. Don't say much. I have to tell you this story, because otherwise it's like it looks like a miracle cure. It's not, because it took 3 months, because you have to go inside and do the work, because you're hurt, right? There's a whole lot of stuff in here. You have to go in and gradually let go and let go and let go and see all the different layers. And if you can do it once, and you can do it again and again, and if you can do it again and again, then you can help other people to do it. Then instead of somebody calls you up and says, oh, I'm having a hard time, you know, you go around and you pat them on the back and you support their story. You give them the work they have to do. That's much more kind. You actually show them, you know, the thing they're holding on to. Help them. Because that way you're actually solving the problem. So my teacher, he says in this book, in the very first chapter, he says, healing our mind is crucial because otherwise our problems, which are beginningless, become endless. So if you don't change the mind, you never change the problems, and then they will come again and again. You know, you might distract, you might go to another place, it will come again and again. And she says, a problem is a particular creation of mind. If the cause of a problem exists in our mind, the problem will definitely manifest unless we purify that cause. If the inner cause of a problem exists, the external conditions for the problem will also exist, because the inner cause creates them. In other words, outer obstacles come from inner obstacles. You have to think a lot about this. Basically what it's saying is, every single problem that you experience in your life is manifested because you have the cause in your mind for it to happen. Now that is a big one. You know, we talk about karma in Buddhism. What is karma? Karma is your own mind displayed in the form of your life, your experiences, and you created it. We created it. The good news is we can change it. It is quite a big one, isn't it? And it does hurt. It should hurt. If it's hurting, you found the spot. And then you let it hurt a little bit. And sometimes you cry a little bit. And then there is that opening and that softening. And things can change. Everything can change. That's the beauty of it. If we want to change, everything can change. Everything. And it's 11:20. Should I leave it there? You have a question? Yeah. Always giving me a hard time. Always. Always. And I couldn't understand why. Like, what have I done? And why? Why would it be like that? Always. Very difficult, very uncomfortable. Especially because he's my teacher, so then you have to be really, really careful. Anybody around him, you know. So I really didn't have a choice but to try and solve it. I mean, Rinpoche put me in the situation, you know. It's like, it's just this is how my teacher is. He puts me in pressure cooker situations to bring everything out. This is the beauty of centers, you know. They just put you in pressure cooker situation. But you don't have to be a center. If you pray, if you want to do the work, you know, it will all be given to you. It's not really even a question of changing what you're doing. It's a question of actually starting to see it, like dropping the blinkers, you know. You know, like I was talking about Florida, and everything is so nice on the outside, and everyone's living their dream, and they're actually all suffering. Now, if you were to say to these people, your lives are full of suffering, they say, no, they're not. I'm actualizing my dream, you know. But if they were to start talking to you in conversation, they would just talk about all the suffering. It would just be suffering, 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 suffering. But they don't think anything's wrong. It's not like you have to go anywhere different or do anything different. It's just like you have to make the decision, you see. Anyway, so sometimes like this, it was like in my face, I had to do something. And I thought I was the innocent victim, you see. And I was hurt, so this one takes time. And the other person has a very fixed view of you. You must remember this when you're dealing with conflicts with people. Other people tend to get very fixed views of us, and the only way you can shift that is by changing your view of them. You have to really start to look at them differently with an open heart and with a different way of viewing them, and that will give them the space to change the way they look at you. But we tend to, people look at us a certain way and, you know, we then get defensive, don't we? And it kind of stagnates, and it becomes, there's a polarity there, so there's no room for change. And that's generally how we function. But in Buddhism, you know, now we're starting to play with the whole thing, aren't we? Because now we are not always going to take the side of our own mind's projection. This is what we learn in Buddhism. Just because this is what you're seeing doesn't mean it's reality. And doesn't mean it can't change. And so now we're giving ourselves back the infinite freedom of not having to believe everything our minds say. Because we're starting to see that there is just what is, there is just what is happening, and then there's everything we're putting on top. And we are putting it on top. And we're learning to take it away. And just let be what's be. It's like this whole process of simplifying our lives. Is that the Lama said? Generally for us, reality is either too close or too far away. When it's too close, we can't deal with it, we get overwhelmed. But when it's too far away, we don't bother. Too close is those moments when everything collapses, you know. Like the 9/11s in our lives. I got in trouble in America because I was calling it 7-Eleven.
I'm a store called 7-Eleven.
I actually forgot. 9/11, or the lady dies. Lady dies. Is that the body? Somebody died. A woman died. They put the body in a coffin and buried it. Don't have need of anything. And one of the things we definitely don't need is to cling to our appearance. Just because something looks a certain way doesn't mean it is that way. How we see things depends on how we look at them. How we look at them depends on how they're appearing to us. But every single person in this room has a different appearance in this room. And we're all cracked, right? So I'll just leave it like that. There's many things to say about the nature of mind, and I've just been kind of doing different ideas. And then I'll probably talk this afternoon more about the nature of mind, just in terms of explaining more what we mean by the mind. It looks like no more questions, right? Do you want to just sit for a few minutes? What do I do when I get stuck? Oh, that's an interesting question. I depend a lot upon one or two friends that I really deeply trust, who will tell me the truth. Not what I want to hear, but what I need to hear. Is that all right? People I believe, you know, can see more clearly than me. Much more clearly than me. And sometimes that can be quite painful. But when it is painful, then I know that it's I'm hitting the right spot. And also, there's another method I use, which I'm often teaching, actually, and that is, I mean, several methods, and that is, when I say depending on people, I mean somebody who will give me a completely different way of viewing the situation. Because when I'm stuck, it's because I'm only seeing the situation one way. And I'm just not able to see it another way. And this is how I do, but I know when I was in California, now people used to come and see me. And I won't tell this story, it's quite interesting. So they generally people they say, "Oh, can I come talk to you?" You know, I say, "Yeah," and then they would come. But generally, it's like before they came to see me, like they'd been to see everybody else. So they'd already been had the tarot card readings, talking to their psychologist, their therapist, you know, talked to everyone around the block. So they'd already got like trillions of different views, and then finally, like the final solution, going through the Buddhist nun. You know. So then by the time they actually come to see me, it's like they're kind of like walking up the hill. I used to live in this cabin. It's like carrying this problem with them, and they can just about fit through the door. You know, they've got so much they're carrying with them. And then, you know, they sit down, you know, it's like, and then I'd say, you know, how can I help? And they'd be like, where can I begin? You know, it's like so complicated, right? You know, that sort of thing. Like, and then I'd say, well, just start. And then they'd start, and they'd just be, you know, main plot and the subplot and the sub subplots and the sub sub subplots and the main sub sub subplot. It was so complicated. It was just like pouring out, and it's over here and it's there and it's up there and there. And if I was in the, you know, I mean, if I was in the good space, I'd just listen to it and I'd just say, you know, when they finished, they'd be like, "Phew, so what do you think?" And I'd say, "Well, it's very simple." because it's not my stuff, right? When it's not your stuff and you haven't made all this complicated thing, it's very simple. It's like, but what happens is we can't see the forest for the trees. You know, we've got into looking at every single detail about the trees. We just lost the fact that there's a forest. So I say, well, it's really simple. I mean, and it's always just something happened. Always like that. Something happened, that's all. You just bring it down to its basic, if something happened. And then it was how they dealt with that. It's all there is to it. If something happens, and then how are you going to deal with that? And actually, that's the whole Buddhist practice. From morning to night, something happens, how are you going to deal with that? So, if things weren't happening, you'd have a problem, right? Because you can't practice. The whole of the practice is how you're dealing with things. And then you check and you think, well, am I dealing better with it now than I was like 3 years ago? And sometimes the answer is, well, yeah, better than a few years ago, but not really where I want to be. You know, there's still a lot of room to move. And that's what makes all these things so precious, because you can judge. You can see, well, yeah, you know, 3 years ago I would have been like this, and now I'm like this. I mean, there's movement, it's getting better. Is it where I want to be? No. Yeah. So they would say all this, and I'd just say, well, it's just really simple. It's like, you just have to look at it this way. And you know how it is. It's like, you just can't see it yourself. But when you look from outside, it's just a different way. You just get stuck in your way of seeing something. So one way is to do that, talk with someone who can. Not somebody who supports your view, you see, but somebody who just shows you a different way of looking at it. And it all changes. You just have to change this and it all changes. It's like the whole thing. You know those, what do they call them, kaleidoscopes? You look through one side and then you turn it and all the patterns change. And you just turn it and the whole pattern changes, doesn't it? Everything changes. It's one way, and then you just go a little turn, and it all changes. And then there's another way, and that way I'll explain in another session, I think. Just a way that you can do it yourself. Because otherwise it becomes intellectual overload. Is that right? But I'll tell you a little story instead of telling you that. Because we can only take in so much. Actually, it's just 2 hours to give a talk, but 2 hours is a lot of time. I'll tell you a little story. I was in Dharamsala. Have you heard this one about the Irish guy and the Buddha? The Irish man and the Buddha? Maybe, okay. Anyway, so I was in Dharamsala. I was teaching a centre there called Tishita. And we used to teach these 10-day courses. And quite a lot of Westerners hanging out in Dharamsala. So the Dalai Lama. And one day this Irish guy came and he just bought himself a Buddha statue. He was really happy. And he was going back to Ireland and he wanted to take it with him. And he said to me, "Could you please get this statue filled?" And I said, sure, no problem. And we had one monk there who was like a tantric monk, and we used to give him statues and he'd take them down to tantric college. And what they do in Tibetan Buddhism is, like a statue, it's like they don't make Tibetan statues full, they make them with a hole. And so why they do that is then they roll up mantras, like brass mantras, and they put precious substances inside, and they pack it so that, you know, your Buddha is like full of all these blessings and you can put special things in it. And then they seal it, and then they like invoke the Buddha into it, and then they, and it's, you know, it's really very, very special. So one of the whole things about these Buddha statues is you get the mantras rolled, you roll them, and then you put them in. So I said, sure, no problem. And generally, only took a day. I'd give it to this monk, he'd take it down to the monastery, bring it back. He said, look, I'm leaving in a week's time, and I've got to have it by then, otherwise, you know, I'm not coming back to Dharamsala. So I said, sure, leave it with me. And then he went off. And he called a few days later. He said, you know, have you got the statue yet? I said, no, not yet, but don't worry, it'll be okay. Well, little did I know that there was some kind of big ceremony going on at this tantric monastery, which meant that they were like doing a really big blast of blessing statues. So they figured, you know, his little statue was going to just be put on the par with all the rest and get this big blast. But it meant that it wasn't just going to be an overnight job. It was getting the full blast of all these days of prayers. So it was good news, really, wasn't it? And but it meant that his statue wasn't kind of down and up again. So he calls me again a few days later and he says, you got my statue? He says, I'm leaving tomorrow. I said, well, it hasn't come yet, but call me tomorrow. So he calls. Next day, he's like, have you got my statue? And I'm like, not yet. I said, what time's your bus? He says, my bus is 4:30. I've got to have it by then. If I don't have it by then, you know, I'm not going to be... It's not going to happen. I said, well, look, if the worst... I said, call me 2 o'clock. The worst comes to the worst. We'll bring it to the bus for you. And I went off to get this monk again. I kept saying to him, where's the statue? And he, you know, didn't come. 2 o'clock he calls. You got my statue? I said, not yet, but it could be any moment. Why don't you call by on your way down? Oh, boy. So he shows up around 3, you know, and his bus is at 4:30. And fortunately, the statue was back, all nicely blessed and packed. And he comes into the office and says, you've got my statue? I said, yeah, here you are. And he's like, oh. He said, you know, it's amazing Buddhism. He said, you know, 3 years ago, I would have smashed your head in. A year ago, I would have sworn abuse at you. And he said, I only got a little bit angry. But he meant it sincerely from his heart. He really meant it. So I took it as a compliment. He said, really, I would never have believed I could have done this. And I thought, well, isn't Buddha just giving you the most amazing teaching? It would have to be a Buddha statue, wouldn't it? Isn't it perfect? What he was getting was the most incredible, blessed Buddha, but what he was experiencing, he was caught up in his, I need it now, and they're not doing it. But he really meant that sincerely from his heart. No, no, 3 years ago I'd have smashed your head in. A year ago I'd have sworn abuse at you. I only got a little bit mad. It's amazing, this Buddhism. You really change. Anyway, so I like that story. It's very honest. So, shall we chant the mantra and then just drift off for lunch? So are you going to stop being silent at lunchtime? Is that the plan? I thought you might want to talk a little bit at lunchtime and then we'll see when we get to the next session, the final session. It's quite nice being quiet, isn't it? Yeah. And then you have discussion group at 3:30, so you can, if there's things that come up. So all this, there's so many beings, and you just think how many human beings there are just in the world, so many millions. And there's so many different ways of suffering, so many problems. All of these coming from the mind, not understanding, just not understanding how it creates problems. All of these completely nonsense, unnecessary. All the wars and conflicts and fighting is all coming from our concept, clinging to things. Believing things have to be a certain way, it can't be another way. Not having space in the mind to openness. It's all completely made up. And the whole thing can dissolve in the mind of compassion. There's space, and the barriers fall away between us and others. And there's openness, there's honesty.
Oh my.